Hi, it's Diane. On my mind.
You know, look, I've covered this company for a long time, and this is the first time that any prosecutor has charged them with a crime. To me, that was a pretty significant development.
What to make of the charges announced last week against the Trump Organization and its chief financial officer? On Thursday, New York prosecutors announced the first charges of their grand jury investigation into the Trump Organization. Prosecutors alleged the former president's business and its chief financial officer committed grand larceny and tax fraud. David Farenthold, reporter with The Washington Post, who covers the Trump family and its business interests, joins me to talk about these charges and what happens next. David, the charges against Donald Trump's organization and its financial chief officer have been described as, quote, just tax evasion. Explain the charges.
Yeah, I think this is a good question because there was so much buildup from both sides about, you know, that when it came out, everybody was primed to believe these charges were going to be something that they weren't. But on their own, they are very significant charges. And I think they show the prosecutors have a lot of evidence about what Trump Org was doing. This is the heart of the case. The prosecutors say that the Trump Organization was running a 15-year-long scheme to avoid paying income taxes, both so its executives could avoid paying income taxes on their pay, and so the company could avoid paying payroll taxes on what it paid to the executives. The way the scheme worked, allegedly, was that they set a cap on how much they were going to pay an executive. So Alan Weisselberg, the chief financial officer, was going to be paid $940,000 every year. And then they gave him things that were not money, but that were seen as part of his compensation. So a free apartment, free cars for him and his wife, a carpet in his house in Florida, tuition for his grandkids, all kinds of things. And they would subtract the value of those non-salary payments from the $940,000 he was supposed to be paid. And then whatever was left over, they would actually pay him in a paycheck. The problem was they only paid taxes on the part that they paid in his paycheck. So say they paid $200,000 to him in non-salary benefits or, you know, non-cash benefits. That takes it down to $740,000. They pay him $740,000 in salary. Then he only pays taxes, and the Trump Organization only pays taxes on the $740,000. So what prosecutors say was that this was a very well thought out, organized, and written down scheme to avoid paying taxes on a portion of the company's executive pay. And it added up. Weisselberg alone supposedly got more than $1.7 million in untaxed salary and avoided more than $900,000 in taxes. So, you know, that's not billions of dollars, but it's a significant amount of money. And the prosecutors showed that they have internal records that really lay this case out. So it's a strong case involving a lot of money.
So were you at all disappointed when you saw what Cy Vance actually laid out, the prosecutor in New York?
No. I came into this with pretty low expectations because I've covered the Trump Organization for a long time. I covered Donald Trump for a long time. And how many times have we seen prosecutions, investigators start looking at him and come up with nothing? So my baseline was that there would be nothing. You know, they would charge them with nothing, or they would charge them with something civil that would end up being a fine. So to see them lay out a criminal case, and it seems like a pretty well-proven criminal case against, not against Trump, but against one of his top executives. You know, look, I've covered this company for a long time, and this is the first time that any prosecutor has charged them with a crime, the company or any one of its staffers. To me, that was a pretty significant development. So no, I wouldn't say I was disappointed.
So you say it's pretty significant. How serious could it be for Weisselberg?
Well, for Weisselberg, I'll tell you about Weisselberg first and then about what that means for Trump second. For Weisselberg, there are 15 charges here. If you add up the prison time for all of them, it would be 80 years in prison. New York's sentencing guidelines are pretty flexible, and he is a first-time offender. If he's convicted, he'd be a first-time offender. He's 73. So, you know, it's not, I don't think he'll get 80 years in prison. And I think in theory, he could get no prison time, you know, just probation. But the folks that I've talked to, and I've been reading sort of legal analysis from people who know the New York court system, think that prison time, 1 to 3 or even 6 years, is certainly a possibility if he doesn't cooperate, if he goes to trial and loses.
And how likely do you think it is he's going to cooperate?
That's a great question. That's the second part of this, is if this case is not against Trump, but if it pushes Weisselberg to cooperate and tell the story of what he knows about Trump, then it could get very serious for Trump. Important thing to remember in financial crimes and financial prosecutions like this is that you need to have evidence of intent. So this isn't like a bank robbery where if somebody robs a bank, you could just assume they knew bank robbery was wrong. A tax crime like this, you need to be able to prove that the people who did it knew what they were doing was wrong and did it anyway. Now, in modern times, most executives trip themselves up with emails, but Trump doesn't use email. And so you'd have to find a handwritten note or, more likely, the recollection of somebody like Weisselberg who was in a meeting with Trump who could say, yeah, I told him, hey, this is wrong, and he did it anyway. So Weisselberg's cooperation, I don't know if it's the only way that they're going to make a charge against Trump, but it certainly would be the easiest way to make a charge against Donald Trump. So the question is, does Weisselberg cooperate? And I think it's really hard to know. I mean, we've heard a lot about how Weisselberg is very loyal, and he's been with Trump since the 1970s. He's also 73 and facing possible prison time. And I think he probably knows Trump well enough to know that Trump might turn on him. We've certainly seen Trump turn on many underlings before that he'd promised loyalty to, Michael Cohen being the best example. So I don't know what's going through Weisselberg's head, but I don't think the clock on whether he's going to cooperate or not started until these charges came down last week. Before then, it was all kind of theoretical. Now he knows what he's facing.
So Donald Trump and others have said this is an apparent deliberate misrepresentation of compensation to the IRS, and it's no big deal.
That was certainly the spin from the Trump people, that, you know, a lot of people do this and nobody ever gets prosecuted. You even heard something, you know, in the old days, they would just call you in and, you know, slap you on the wrist and tell you to pay it back. That's not really a legal defense, though. I mean, if it's illegal, it's illegal. And I think to say that some people sometime may have gotten away with this doesn't create a right that the Trump people can get away with this. Talking to tax law experts, they said, you know, if you came across, maybe the IRS wouldn't come across this case because it doesn't involve that much money and in the grand scheme of things, and the IRS is very understaffed. But if you come across a case where there's two sets of books, where they're deliberately keeping records of the money that they're withholding from the IRS, if you find that case, you prosecute it. And the reason was, it's easy to prosecute because you can use their own records against them. And also, it's important to prosecute because that's what holds the tax system together. If you let people get away with deliberately taking notes on their tax evasion and don't prosecute them, the system starts to fall apart.
Explain two sets of books and what that means.
That's really the heart of this case, is there's an effort here, according to prosecutors by the Trump Organization, to withhold taxes they should be paying, and then to keep records of the taxes they should have been paying. And so think about this. Think of this just as a different kind of case. If I owned a restaurant and I wanted to pay my waiters under the table, and I just would give them cash every week and then not report that to the IRS, that would be hard to prove because there wouldn't be records of it. And even if you arrested me, it would be hard to know how much money I had, how much taxes I had evaded because I didn't keep records of the cash I gave out under the table. This is a different case. Allegedly, the Trump Organization kept records. They understood that they were going to pay Alan Weisselberg $940,000 every year, but they worked hard to convert some of that $940,000 into non-cash, non-paycheck payments. And then they only paid taxes on the remainder that they paid through salary. So they kept records showing that they understood this was compensation, and then they also hid it from the IRS, so they were showing that they understood what they were doing was wrong.
But does that make sense to keep that separate book knowing it could turn up?
It doesn't make a lot of sense, and that's, I think, what surprised the tax law prosecutor so much, is that most people don't keep another set of books that show you exactly the details of their tax fraud. Knowing the company as well as I do, I think this is a collision of two values in which Trump had to choose one over the other. One of those values is not keeping records. The Trump Organization and Trump particularly are famous for not keeping records on things. But there's also a current of cheapness, right? And the purpose of keeping this second set of books was to make sure that when you were giving these people payments under the table, allegedly, that you weren't giving them too much, that they still weren't getting more benefits, that Alan Weisselberg was getting paid $940,000 a year and not $941,000. And so you had to keep these records to make sure that in the course of this tax evasion, Alan Weisselberg didn't get a little more cash than he deserved.
Over the weekend, speaking to a large crowd, Donald Trump seemed to say, well, doesn't everybody do this? Doesn't everybody grant a little here and a little there and help out with college tuition and an apartment so he doesn't have to drive a long way? It sounded as though he was completely acknowledging that what the prosecutors are charging is true.
You're right. The defense from the Trump Organization and from Trump himself, there's been no disputing of the facts. There has been no, well, we didn't give Alan Weisselberg that car, or we didn't pay for the tuition. That's all accepted. And the defense is, it's not really a legal one. It's more of a political one, which is like, everybody does it. You know, so why should we get punished? There is a little element of a legal defense in there, which is Trump at that rally in Sarasota said, well, you know, I don't know. I don't know how this is supposed to be treated. You know, that's a defense. If he can make the case he doesn't know how the tax law works, then maybe he can say he didn't break the law. But Weisselberg certainly knew. And you remember Trump, when he ran in 2016, he told us he knows the tax laws better than just about anybody. So it seems like it's going to be a hard case to make that this pretty simple element of tax law, that he didn't understand it.
Exactly on that point, how hard a case is this going to be for Zy Vance to make and carry through and punish Weisselberg, if not get to Donald Trump?
Well, people that we talked to seem to think it was a very strong case, bolstered by those Trump Organization records. You know, it's possible that in this, you know, Alan Weisselberg could argue at the end of it that he doesn't, you know, he did this innocently or he was relying on the advice of some other expert. You know, but the elements of the fraud, at least as prosecutors laid them out, are pretty clear and pretty documented in the Trump Organization's own record. So this is not sort of an airy-fairy case where you're having to make guesses about what was taken. According to the prosecutors, they know exactly how much, and the Trump Organization's own records are sort of a roadmap to the case.
Is there more information to come, do you suspect?
I suspect so. I'm not certain. Over the course of this investigation, you know, it's the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance, and also the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, both Democrats. They've both been investigating Trump Org for more than 2 years. And in the past, they have laid out a bunch of other things that they said they were interested in. The tax fraud sort of appeared at the last minute. We had not really ever heard about this benefit scheme before it was charged. But they talked about investigating the hush money payments made to Stormy Daniels during the 2016 presidential campaign, Trump allegedly lying to his lenders and to taxing authorities about the values of his properties, taking big tax breaks he didn't deserve. All those issues that they had said before they were really interested in, they've been gathering records through subpoenas, none of that was in this indictment. And I guess it's possible that when they concluded their investigation of those things, they decided no laws were broken and this is the end. But the DA and the Attorney General have both said it's not the end. They're continuing. So I'm hopeful that we'll get some sort of answers on those other bigger issues that they've said they were looking into.
But let's just suppose for a moment they don't get any other information. How similar is this to the FBI investigation that finally brought down Al Capone on tax evasion?
It's a really good parallel to make. I think in this case, right now, the problem they're going to have is, remember, at least if we all watch the great Brian De Palma movie, The Untouchables, they had the bookkeeper. Right now, the prosecutors don't have the bookkeeper. And the bookkeeper, in this case, Weisselberg, would be the one who would connect the, you know, if there were violations of the law done by the company, could say, yes, this was done at the behest of Donald Trump, and Donald Trump knew what he was doing was wrong when he did it. That, I think, is the difference here. If you're going to prove Trump evaded taxes or Trump did anything else, you need somebody to tell you that Trump gave the order and that he what he understood at the time that he did it. At this point, they have documents, but as far as we know, they don't have a person who could put those words in Trump's mouth.
So a lot rides on whether Weisselberg is going to be, I don't know, threatened with a long prison term, separated from his family, stripped of his assets. I mean, how far can Cy Vance go to push Weisselberg?
Well, I think we haven't seen the whole case, but we have now seen what he believes is his best shot at Weisselberg. So now in Weisselberg, as you saw last week, he's been handcuffed. He's been walked down the hallway at Manhattan Criminal Court with detectives holding his arms. He's sat in court. He's had his passport taken. You know, it's real now, if it wasn't real before. And so he now knows, you know, he has a sense of the risk he's taking if he decides not to cooperate. And I think, you know, if he decides to cooperate, from what I've read, his chances of getting prison time are pretty low. If he takes the risk, doesn't cooperate, and goes to trial, he could be facing 2 to 6 years of prison time, which is it's a lot for a guy in his 70s. You know, how he makes that calculation, how he, you know, squares that with the life he spent working for Donald Trump. Weisselberg has a really good lawyer, a lawyer named Mary Mulligan, who's an experienced Manhattan criminal defense lawyer. So he's getting good advice, but it's his decision. You know, he's got to weigh those, you know, the past of his life versus the possible future.
A quick break. When we come back, the rest of my conversation with David Farenthold.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with David Farenthold. He's a reporter with The Washington Post who covers the Trump family and its business interests. All of this so far has been focused on Weisselberg. Are there others that could be named or involved?
Yes. In the charging documents, there was reference to a number of other people, both who helped Weisselberg run the scheme. You know, Weisselberg he's the one person named as sort of the person who was in charge of the tax fraud, but it says that he did it with quote-unquote others at the company. And there are others who benefited from the tax fraud. From the charging documents, it appears that Alan Weisselberg's son, Barry, who worked for the Trump ice rink, is one of them, and a couple other executives. None of them have been charged. There's been a mention of this guy named Matthew Calamari, who is the Trump Organization's COO. Other news outlets have written that he got some free benefits, maybe a free apartment and a car. I don't know if they'll be charged or not. The Weisselberg was, he was both the president and the client in this situation. I mean, he was the one who was running the scheme allegedly, and he's the one who benefited from the scheme. So he's a much easier target to charge than somebody downstream or who was in a non-financial role who might have gotten these benefits and sort of could make the case like, well, I didn't know what I didn't know what the law was here. I was just doing what Alan Weisselberg told me. So there haven't been other folks charged in this tax scheme, but it sounds like other people benefited from it. And so some charges are possible down the line.
So Trump is trying to convince, and probably doing a pretty good job of it, trying to convince his supporters that this is all a political attack. How much politics is involved here?
Well, that's a really good question. It was a DA's underling who spoke at the arraignment last week and who said, you know, this is not about politics. This is a clear tax fraud case. There was no tax fraud. I mean, there was no politics in the jury room. These two folks are Democrats, Cyrus Vance and Letitia James. They're at different places in their career. Cyrus Vance is about to retire. Letitia James is somebody who just got elected a couple years ago, is seen as ambitious in New York politics. She, when she ran in 2018, said she was going to investigate Trump. You know, that was part of her mandate as the AG. So these are folks who are no fans of Trump politically. But it's important to know how this began. This did not begin sort of with Cyrus Vance and Tish James sitting down and being like, you know what, I hate Donald Trump. I'm going to make a case against him. It began with this in a crazy chain of events, Stormy Daniels. Stormy Daniels asked for this payoff to conceal her alleged affair from Trump in 2016. Michael Cohen arranges the payoff. Michael Cohen goes to jail for that, arranging that payoff. Cohen turns on Trump and begins spilling all the corporate secrets. So it was Cohen's testimony at his own sentencing and in front of Congress about other things the Trump Organization had done that caused this sort of investigations to begin. So, you know, this was not something that was started out of a political vendetta. It was started in reaction to a very prominent former executive at this company going before the public and being like, they're breaking all kinds of laws. So in that way, you know, it was a reaction to something, not just a reaction to politics.
It's really extraordinary when you think about this whole thing. There has been speculation that Weisselberg will cooperate. Do you believe he will?
I don't know. It's hard for me to put myself in the mind of Alan Weisselberg. You know, he's worked for the Trump Organization since the 70s. Certainly knew who Donald Trump was and stuck by him and has benefited quite a lot. He gets paid $940,000 a year. He has a great apartment on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Has a free Mercedes. You know, this is somebody who got an accounting degree at Pace University and started at the lowest levels at the Trump Organization. So being with Trump has made his life. All the status and the money he has in this life came from Trump. So you're asking him to turn on a guy that played that role in his life. On the other hand, he's also now in a lot of legal trouble because of Trump, and he probably knows Trump's character well enough to think about, you know, well, what happened to Michael Cohen happened to me, which is that Trump will begin blaming the underling to help himself.
So let's just speculate. If he does turn against Trump, then what happens?
Well, if he turns against Trump, prosecutors believe that if he turns against Trump, that they'll be able to connect Trump to a number of what they believe are financial misdeeds in the company's past. There are things that the company did that the prosecutors want to know what Trump's role. And Trump was basically the decision maker in everything in that company. But, you know, you can't, like, just to say that blanket statement doesn't help you in court. They need somebody to say, like, yes, I did, in this situation, I was responding to an order from Donald Trump. That said, we really haven't seen the evidence of other crimes beyond the ones that we saw last week. It's not like the prosecutors have said, we are sure X, Y, and Z transactions from the Trump Organization are fraudulent, and we just need to figure out if it was, you know, Trump who did it or Weisselberg alone. You know, so if Weisselberg cooperates, we're sort of, you know, there's two kinds of guesswork involved, two levels of guesswork. A, that Weisselberg will tell them that Trump directed him to do fraudulent acts, and also that they've found fraudulent acts. So certainly it would move the investigation forward, but it's not, you know, it's not like Trump's going to be, you know, charged with 50 felonies tomorrow.
During the campaign, Attorney General Letitia James did make some comments, and to quote, she said, a bright light into every corner of his real estate dealings and every dealing, demanding truthfulness at every turn, she promised to shine a light on. Should she have recused herself from this whole examination?
That's an interesting question. It's a political office, obviously. The Attorney General is an office elected by the public. And so you can make the case that she had a right. This is one of the most important issues she was going to inherit. So she had a right to tell people what she wanted. You know, I guess the case you could make was that it would hurt an eventual prosecution of Trump if she recused herself because Trump could claim that the whole case was made out of bias. At this point, I don't think she's going to suffer any legal consequences from that. I don't think that Trump's going to be able to make the case that this is the, you know, there's evidence here that, you know, they're going to be pointing at concrete evidence. So I don't think Trump can make the case that it's tainted or that the case should be thrown out because of its association with James. And as far as the political argument, you know, would it make people trust the case more if it wasn't Letitia James running it? I don't know. Before James, there was someone named Barbara Underwood who was appointed to the job of New York Attorney General. She's the one who led the investigation the lawsuit against the Trump Foundation. She was an appointed person, appointed to her job when the previous AG, Eric Schneiderman, resigned. So she wasn't a Democrat or Republican. She was just a person who'd been in state government and happened to have the state job for a little while. Trump attacked her as a Democrat, too. So, you know, whether it was Letitia James or Letitia James' number two person, I don't think that would stop Trump from saying Democrats in New York are after me.
Okay, so what happens next?
Well, in this particular case, in the tax fraud case against Weisselberg and Trump org, it's going to be a little while. The next hearing is in September. Probably we're going to talk about motions back and forth through November and December. I don't actually see this going to trial until next year at the earliest. The question more imminently is what becomes of the rest of these investigations? Is there going to be more charges against Trump? You know, and I think that we might know better in the next couple of months once we know whether Weisselberg is cooperating. I think hopefully that decision will be made relatively soon so Weisselberg can head off his own prosecution. And then, you know, then we might start to see more movement.
But the whole thing could go on for at least another year.
Yes. Trump's strategy in while he was president was to delay this stuff until after his second election. And I think he will also follow a similar delaying pattern now, that they will file motions and challenges and try to stretch this out as long as they can, maybe stretch it into the next election or past the next election. But yes, I think it could be 2022 or 2023, even before this relatively narrow case is heard.
What do you think are the odds that someone is going to go to jail over this?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say, I mean, if you look at the charges against Weisselberg, assuming he doesn't cooperate and he's convicted, I think the odds are relatively high. But there's a lot of ways he could stave it off. He could cooperate. You know, he could, you know, there could be some other way to avoid. And I can't see Weisselberg doing, you know, 5 years in state prison. But there's a lot of reasons that could happen. He could get leniency from the judge, or he could help save himself by cooperating.
Tell me about the other charges that could be investigated or are being investigated and could be brought against Trump.
Charges the topics we know about that the AG and the district attorney are interested in mainly involve lenders and taxing authorities. So the questions were, did Trump, you know, inflate the value of his properties beyond what was possible, what was legally right when he wanted to impress lenders, so they would give him, they think he was a better credit risk and give him a loan? Did he shrink those valuations beyond what was legally right to tell taxing authorities so they'd lower his tax bill? So just to give you one example, Trump owns an estate in Westchester County, New York called Seven Springs. And 5-6 years ago, he put a conservation easement on it, basically agreed not to ever develop part of the property, just to leave it as open space. And then he took a tax write-off for what he said was the loss in value from giving up his development rights. And that was $21 million. He said he gave up a $21 million in value. And according to the AG, the New York AG, he did get a $21 million tax deduction. So the question was that appropriate? Did he lie to the tax, to the people who valued that parcel and say, like, oh, you know, I have these permissions to build here and I could build here tomorrow and I could make this much money from selling all the lots? And then there's another issue where Trump was forgiven a debt of more than $100 million on his Chicago hotel. Basically, the lender decided he was never going to pay, and so they took the loan was $150 million, and they decided to accept $48 million and call it a day. So $102 million of forgiven debt. If that happens, you're supposed to, in most circumstances, report the forgiven debt as income on your taxes, because it's like you know basically somebody gave you $102 million. And there was the AG said that they could not, said last year, that they could not find any evidence that Trump actually did pay income taxes on that $102 million forgiven debt. That may have gotten sorted out. As I said, it was not in last week's indictments. But that, if there was a tax debt owed on that, it could be pretty significant. And so those seem to be the things that they were focused on, but they've looked very widely. They've subpoenaed records from Trump Doral down in Miami, from the Trump Hotel in D.C., from his golf course in California, really all over the place. So it's hard to know from the outside what they're still interested in. What are all those topics are still live ones in their office?
Is it true that in 2016 and 17, Donald Trump paid only $750 in taxes?
You know, New York Times reported that, and I have no reason to doubt it. I wish I had those primary source documents myself, but I don't.
Wow. It's just really extraordinary. And there's also an investigation in Georgia. What's going on there?
We don't know that much about that. Right after January 6th, there was the Fulton County DA, it's the county that includes Atlanta. She said that she was investigating Trump for his role in basically pressuring Georgia officials to overturn his election loss there. So if you remember, Trump called the Georgia Secretary of State and told him to find votes, find enough votes to overturn his 11,000 vote loss. The question was, could Trump be charged with subverting the election, trying to subvert the election? We heard they started that investigation back in January. We haven't heard anything from the Fulton County DA about where it's going. I can't tell you if it's alive or dead or about to conclude, or it's going to take another year.
You know, it does make me wonder whether all of this is going to result in changes in the U.S. tax law. I mean, if these loopholes are there, why hasn't somebody done something about them?
And the ProPublica has done some great reporting about this too, how, you know, the Amazon, you know, the richest people in America pay so little in taxes because they can afford to hire the lawyers who will figure out how to avoid their tax bills. And the IRS has been so gutted that the IRS basically looks for low-hanging fruit, right? They look for cases they can win and not where they're going to have to face off against some high-powered lawyer. So, I think there has been a lot of calls for, Congress doesn't have the intellectual firepower to reform the tax laws, at least to give the IRS more money to enforce them. The IRS, nobody likes the IRS, even though we kind of depend on them, nobody likes them. So who wants to give them more money? The result is a system where the tax code is full of loopholes, and then there's effectively more created because the IRS doesn't have the money to defend itself.
You've been following this story for a number of years. Is there anything else you want to say that I haven't asked you about?
I guess the one other thing that I'm interested in is the impact of these charges on Trump's company, not in a legal sense, but in a financial sense. So I guess step back. The Trump Organization was basically set up to do two things. It was set up to monetize Trump's brand and to follow Trump's interest. Okay, so it sold, it put Trump's names on water, eyeglasses, suits, ties. And it also followed his interest. He was interested in hotels, so they had some hotels. He was interested in golf, so they had some golf courses. But now Trump has trashed the brand and he's lost interest. He's not really that interested in his company anymore. So the future of the Trump Organization, I think, is really in doubt right now, both because of all the financial headwinds they've had, all the properties they've lost, all the customers they've lost, all the merchandising opportunities they've lost, but also because its reason to exist was sort of the interests of one guy, and that guy is just not that interested anymore. So these charges against the company and also against Weisselberg are arriving at a time when the Trump Organization is kind of in an existential crisis anyway. So I'm interested to see how this affects the company, even outside of the legal sphere. How does it add weight to a company that's already sort of struggling with problems on every front?
And what about voters? What about his supporters? Any thoughts on how all of this may or may not affect their view of Donald Trump?
To me, if January 6th and COVID didn't change your view of Donald Trump, and those were things that were much more directly affecting people, the public, it was much more about the job he was going to do as president. If that didn't sway you, if what you like about Donald Trump has overcome that, I don't think that this stuff in New York State is going to change your mind on this. I don't really see this. And I hope it wasn't conceived of this way by prosecutors, but I don't really see this case as this is the knockout blow for Trump the politician. This is going to take Trump off the board. They shouldn't have pursued it if that's the reason they got into it. And I don't think that will be the outcome. I don't really see a situation where this is the thing that makes people, give up on Donald Trump.
So you think his property losses may be huge, his wealth may diminish, but you don't see Donald Trump spending any time in jail?
At this point, there's no reason to think he will. I mean, that could change. Obviously, prosecutors are still investigating it, but there's no charges and there don't seem to be any charges against him on the immediate horizon. So, and even if he did, honestly, I think if Trump went to jail for a year or 6 months, again, those are possibilities that are totally off the board as far as we know right now. But if he did, would that change people's minds about him as a politician? Maybe. I don't know. But I see this. I'm interested in this in the long-term consequences it has for his business. I don't think it will end his political career. And like I said, I hope it's the prosecutors didn't get into this thinking that that's what they were going to do.
David, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was David Fahrenthold, reporter with The Washington Post, who covers the Trump family and its business interests. And that's all for today. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Allison Brody and Sandra Baker. Our engineer today is Michael Kidd. Thanks for listening, all. Be well, stay safe. I'm Diane Rehm.